Back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me, as always, there is Danny King.
How's it going, Brian?
It's going well.
It's good.
And Amanda Waltz.
Hi, Brian and Danny.
Hi, Amanda.
Hi.
So today we will just be talking about the film Kimiko the Treasure Hunter, because we've all had a long weekend and we don't 100% want to talk about anything else. Before we get into that, let's talk about, however, where you can talk to us. Thefilmstageshow.com. Always you can comment on our posts there under the features section. In addition, you can comment and rate us on iTunes, and you can email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/filmstageshow. That's about that.
Anything don't we have else? A MySpace page?
No, we don't. I'm sorry. We used to. Back when this was an indie rock band out of Portland. But ever since we've kind of pivoted into podcasting, it's just been defunct. Sorry.
And just making sure. I just want everybody to know where they can find us.
Well, I think that's all the place. I think we have a Tumblr.
Oh, okay.
Just on our Film Stage Show Tumblr. But that's all. So today, we're going to talk about Kimiko the Treasure Hunter, and this is a new film by David Zellner, and it stars Rinko Kikuchi, who you might remember from Babel and The Brothers Bloom, and it is about a young Japanese woman who believes that the movie Fargo is telling a true story and actually travels to America to attempt to recover the treasure that was buried by Steve Buscemi in that movie. If that sounds like a raucous comedy, be prepared to be gravely disappointed. Here is the trailer.
It's no fun traveling alone. Solitude, just fancy loneliness.
All right, so Kimiko the Treasure Hunter. Danny King, why don't you kick us off? Well, what were you expecting from this movie, and what did you think of what you got?
I haven't seen any other films by the Zeltner brothers, so I didn't really have any idea what to expect from them. But based on reading stuff and getting a sense of the quirk, I didn't necessarily have super high expectations, just because I'm not... quirky comedies like that don't tend to be up my alley. But I ended up liking it more than I thought I would, mostly because a lot of the comedy was sort of visual and based on the compositions, which I thought were pretty sharp. And the lead performance I thought was really good. It's funny, I saw this movie a couple weeks ago because I had relatives in town, and I didn't really know what to pick, and they went with this one just because I think the premise was so strange. But the movie starts and there's like not dialogue for like 5 minutes or something, and I could hear them starting to like move in their seats, but I think they eventually got into it because it's really funny. I think
did we watch the same movie?
Yeah, wait, did you not laugh?
Not really, no.
Okay. I laughed a few times.
All right, well, this should be interesting.
Yeah, wait, now I'm trying to like remember specific stuff that I laughed at.
Yeah, please, if you can think of a thing that you laughed at, please.
Like one thing? Well, yeah, I mean, the movie, I guess, yeah, maybe I'm playing up the comedy too much, because they're, I think that, you know, the characters' loneliness is very sad, and the actress plays that up. There's the shot I remember where she's like eating ramen at the window. And, but yeah, I mean the workplace comedy, like the, I'm trying to remember. Eventually, the reason I prefer the first half of the film is because, from my memory, the comedy was like mostly visual. It eventually becomes like a culture clash sort of comedy where she travels to Minnesota to find.
Again, we're all comfortable with this being called a comedy. I really am chafing at the continued use of the word comedy with
to this movie. So the movie is about this office drone leading. Okay, here's a scene that's funny. Okay. When she gets stopped on the street by that friend of hers. And,
oh, that woman.
And her friend's like insanely chirpy. And Kumiko's reactions are just like very blank. Did you laugh at that?
No.
I laughed at that. Where she's pretend stabbing her with the phone.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty silly.
Yeah. But yeah, okay. So
right
the movie is about a woman who watches Fargo and thinks it's real. So there are scenes of her drawing or making like a map, threading a map of the money, and watching the film really intensely for clues that I found funny. And then, yeah, the second half of the film, she actually travels there, and there's a really funny scene where a cop, who I think is played by one of the brothers that made the film, the cop tries to explain to her the concept of a real movie versus a fake movie. And I found that scene kind of funny actually as a commentary, just because one of the consistent themes of like current movies is like blurring the line between documentary and fiction. So it's funny to hear someone trying to explain the difference in a way that's so black and white. He's like, this is fake. Other movies are real. Did you laugh at that?
It actually kind of reminded me of when I would go to clubs and tell guys that I studied film.
Yeah.
And they would say, I like documentaries because they're real.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that.
Yeah. Because it's like to say, I like documentaries. It's like, oh, that's a very like shocking statement. There are like millions of documentaries. But so I did find the film funny, but I also really liked the performance and I sort of found her red jacket amusing. I mean, she wears a blanket. You didn't laugh at that?
We'll get into it when I talk about what I thought of this
movie. Wow. I'll stop for now.
Okay, so Danny King thought this was a laugh riot. Overall you liked the movie?
Yeah, I liked it more than I thought. More than I thought I would. But
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Amanda Waltz, what did you think of this?
Did you forget my name there for a second?
No, I'm just like, I'm still
trying
to wrap my head around the concept of a comedy. Amanda Waltz, did you laugh your ass off at this thrill-a-minute joyride?
So.
Are you like running away from the microphone every time you laugh?
I don't want to laugh right into the microphone because I laugh so loud. When I first heard about this film, when I first read about it, I went into it thinking it was a dark comedy, and I was actually talking to one of my coworkers about it who had seen it, and he said it was severely depressing. So I think it does kind of fall in the middle where it is this woman who is clearly unstable.
Yep.
And lives on her own, and to be fair, she lives in a culture that values young women, and when you hit a certain age, like he's like her boss who it's kind of interesting though, because the interactions with her boss is sort of like I think it shows just how boring and mundane this office job is, because it's like she's obviously very bored with it, but then her boss also seems very bored with it. Like whenever she walks in the office, he just kind of has like his head down on the desk and is like playing with like a glass globe, or like just kind of like he just seemed so not into anything that's going on. And which I think is why he never fires her, because she's a terrible employee. But it's just interesting, because it's like you feel for her, because you're like, obviously she wants something. She wants more than just this life that everybody, this life path that everybody wants her to take, which is, oh, you work in this office for a while and you either get married and have kids, or you keep going through your career. And she doesn't want either. But the path that she chooses is kind of like, is so unusual. And so, you know, she's talking about how she's a Spanish conquistador, that part where she goes into the library and right. She tries to steal that map. And she's talking about...
That was funny.
I actually kind of like that, because it's strange how people react to her, because she's so... She's just such a husk of a woman.
Yeah, the like mall cop who accosts her,
yeah,
tears the page out of the book and gives it to her when she tries to steal the book, and he's just like, "Don't come back! I can't make a habit out of this."
I know,
I'm like, no, man, you really can't.
But it's strange, because it's like she has such a conviction and such a commitment to like what she's doing that it almost like inspires people to help her. But at the same time, it's like, this woman is clearly insane.
Yes.
And why are you helping her? But it's, and there was a couple moments where I was filled with dread, because I thought that she was going to do something very extreme. Like when she has her bunny and she goes to the park and she's talking to the bunny about how she has to go away and how she's going to set him free. And she's on a bridge over a creek. And I'm like, if she drowns that rabbit,
I am done.
I thought for sure she was gonna drown that rabbit. Like, that's how, just to paint a picture of just like how unstable this woman is.
Hilariously unstable.
But I mean, there is it, I think the comedy doesn't come so much from like what she's doing, but like how people are just so at a loss of how to deal with her, because it's like she goes to the United States and David Zellner, who directed the film and co-wrote it with his brother, plays the cop, and he's so nice and so patient and so like helpful. Mm-hmm. but there's of course that language barrier, and she meets that woman who just like, it's sort of that, I don't know if I watched a thing about Fargo, once about the making of Fargo, and they were talking about how in Minnesota there's this thing called Minnesota Nice, where it's just mm-hmm. like people in Minnesota are just like so extremely nice and generous. And she just experiences that all throughout her journey, where this woman picks her up and just takes her back to her house and gives her cocoa. And the woman, it's strange, because I think that this movie is just kind of like depicting loneliness, but at different levels. Like, of course, Kimiko is at a very extreme sort of example of that. But then there's like the older woman who, you know, she's like functional, but you can tell like her husband's dead and like, her son never visits, and she just really wants someone to hang out with. Like, so she picks up this woman along the side of the road, is like, we're going to go to the mall tomorrow. Like, you can tell she just really wants someone. And then there's the cop who, like, he says at one point that he has a family, but you can tell that, like, he kind of wants to connect with someone on another level, like, on a, like, I don't know. But it's just interesting how it's this movie about loneliness that isn't necessarily, like, one understanding of loneliness. I don't know. It's also, like, I don't feel like Kimiko is really... But at the same time, I don't feel like Kimiko is really lonely. I think she just doesn't want to be around people. Like, I don't think she... I think she's just completely, like, antisocial and just completely, like, wants to be on her own. Mm-hmm. Which is... I don't know. Which is... I think it's a very interesting... And actually, after I watched this movie, I wanted to see... Because it's inspired by a true story, which is so meta because of the whole Fargo.
Right.
Like, of course, but I actually, there's a short documentary about the actual incident that inspired this movie called This Is a True Story.
Right.
And so it's,
and
only like...
But Paul Burkseller?
Like, yeah. No, I think his name's like Daniel something like that. I can't remember, but like I watched it, and it's just so interesting to see how it gets like skewed, and how they like portrayed the woman that actually died. So yeah, I mean, it was an all around interesting experience. I don't know if I would ever watch this movie again, but it was beautifully shot, and Rinko was, I think she gave like a pretty nuanced performance.
First name basis.
What's that?
You and her are on such good terms that you feel comfortable calling her by her first name.
Am I supposed to say? Okay. Like if it was Sylvester Stallone, I would say like, oh, Sylvester gave a really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it was, yeah, it's interesting because I feel like I have a feeling that like your reading of the movie, Brian, is going to make me sort of like in between you and Danny, like in terms of how you both read this movie.
So, well, first of all, I looked it up. The documentary is by Paul Burkzeller. This is a true story. And I know that because I, after I saw this movie, went searching for the real woman that this was based on, and she did not actually die looking for the treasure from this Fargo. She died because she was insanely depressed and wanted to kill herself.
Yeah, because her lover jilted her, and
And there's a story on The Guardian called Death in the Snow about it. So yeah, what did I think of this movie? This was a depressing jilt, like, my God, guys. This was a horrifying film. I was watching it in a state of perpetual shock and terror. Because, like, just no one was helping this poor, poor woman who was struggling so much and was obviously mentally disturbed and was set on a path where I immediately knew. I'm like, oh, this movie's going to end in a horrible, horrible way. Part of me was like, wow, I really hope she finds that treasure. But that ain't the world we live in. And it just, it was constantly a source of great frustration for me that no one was acting responsibly. And it just became the story of how culture, both your own culture and the culture of a foreign land, can act as agents in your eventual destruction through your own mental disorder.
Mm.
There was no humor.
I think that's a fair reading.
I didn't laugh once, because every time that something happened, I was like, why isn't anyone helping her? Why is the world allowing this to happen to this poor woman? It was almost Greek
but
in how it delighted in destroying her.
But to be fair, she didn't want... She was so aggressively against anyone helping her.
She should have been committed against her will. So I can understand the old woman in the house doesn't really get it. But the police officer knows what is going on.
She is wearing a blanket and is wandering the streets.
Yeah. There are people like that all over DC. And none of them are so cute and fanciful as to believe that they're going to find, like, buried treasure. They're just crazy. And this poor woman, like, degenerates over the course of the movie from a fanciful free thinker stuck in a patriarchal society to a straight-up crazy person wandering around in a blanket, and no one is helping her. And the cop, who understands her issues the most, is just enabling her. And I just, at every point, I was like, call someone! Well, save this woman!
So one of the things that I found interesting was that...
I was distressed the entire time. Every time she talked to her mom, every time she talked to anyone, I was like, this is a... And luckily, I'm looking at the IMDb page now. It says drama. It doesn't say comedy. So insofar as IMDb is concerned, I am correct. But I would also put, like, psychological thriller down there. Because I was just... I was aghast at this movie.
It is like... And one of the things that I found really interesting was... So I guess in the actual case, when the cops found... the woman, they called Chinese restaurants to see if anybody could translate, which to me was like, are there no colleges that you could call? Maybe
Oh, that's like, actually a good idea.
Wow. Somebody, yeah. Yeah, why are you calling restaurants?
Call a comic store. See if there's any fans of manga.
See if there's any nerd boys there. Yes. Like, yeah, but it's just like, why are you not calling, you know, people who are just, I don't know. It just seems like the cops didn't really put that much effort into it. And
No, I mean, like, we're talking about between reality and the movie. In the movie,
in the movie he didn't either, but that's right. What I'm saying. Like, but it's definitely like based on that.
Dopey, lovable kind of guy. But there are just so many points in this movie where I was like, someone help this woman. And the weird thing is that I kind of liked the movie, but almost in the way that you would like a Michael Haneke film, not in the way that you'd like a Wes Anderson film.
Yikes. That's a bit of a jump.
Watched what I watched.
Well, no, I agree. It is.
She puts a bunny on a subway train and weeps as it drives away. That's not funny. That is mentally disturbed behavior of someone who needs a lot of help.
I didn't laugh at that. I already said I thought she was going to drown that thing. So, like, to show you where I'm at with, I'm with you, man.
Okay.
I'm with you on this. But it is like, but like I said before, it's like what she does isn't funny. It's just, it's almost like uncomfortable laughter because it's like, how do you react to someone like this who you are trying to help them, but then in the middle of the night, they just straight up like run away and you can't find them. And that's what she does through this entire movie. She just will just like sneak out of places. She'll run out. She will just disappear. She wants so, and it's almost kind of like, I feel like the message of this movie is the only freedom is death. Which is like,
it gets there. We'll talk about it in spoilers. Cause,
wow.
But yeah, I mean,
that's bleak.
Well, Danny, what? I mean, you saw the movie. But
I think I saw a different film.
I was about to say, like, are we sure we watched the exact same thing? There was a bunny called Bunzo.
Nope, don't. Yeah, I'm kidding.
I will say that pet stores in Japan are a lot cooler than pet stores in America.
Dude, you can get owls in Japan.
You can get owls and monkeys.
Dude.
And their rabbit food has a legitimate, giant, cute cartoon rabbit head on it. Like it's a video game.
Man. Let's move to Japan, you guys.
I'm down to do it.
All right, cool.
Glad we could make that decision.
Well, I think this movie also touches on how, and I think this is something in American and Japanese culture, is that it's two very consumerist cultures. And so I did feel like there that sort of contributed to like her emptiness, because it's like, there's that scene where she's in the office and the other office girls are talking about like, I got my eyelashes permed. And they're all just like giggling. And like every time she meets that one woman, like when she meets her crazy friend, she has a shopping bag and when she comes to the United States, the older woman who picks her up, her suggestion is that, oh, we're going to go to the Mall of America.
Weirdly enough, she doesn't say anything about shopping at the mall.
Oh, they're going to shop at the mall.
I mean, she wants to go see the Ferris wheel and the Mirror Museum.
But that's still part of that culture is like you're consuming and constantly, but I think she wants more than that. I think she wants something that's just hers. That's like an experience that only she can have.
Right. She wants
no one else can have.
A special person.
Yeah. And
it's her destiny,
like,
she says a couple times.
Yeah.
Again, because she's crazy.
Wow.
You put a different soundtrack, not even a different soundtrack. The soundtrack in this movie very clearly announces that this is like a bad thing happening all the time.
Well, there were times when I thought the soundtrack sounded like an old video game soundtrack. There were a couple times, I think when she was in the library, it had that almost like Zelda-esque sound to it.
Yeah.
It was very strange.
Oh my god.
Jeez, Brian.
Well, okay, so
I mean, like, I just watched this movie, so I'm still vibrating in the aftermath of this nightmare.
Maybe I've just watched way too many Eastern European films that I'm just like, that's fine.
Danny, what were you going to say?
I was going to say that, well, one thing is that the movie opens on a pretty weird note where she comes upon the tape, like, in a very vague way.
Right. She's, like, following one of her stitched maps and finds the tape.
So,
yeah.
And I still don't really get that beginning, but so, but because of that, I was watching, I think I was maybe removed from the movie in sense of looking at it as like reality. And so maybe that's why I didn't find it so disturbing. And the other thing is, I think Amanda was sort of hinting at this a little bit, but like, there is something kind of awesome about her. And just like this image of her walking through this snowbound landscape with like a red hoodie and a blanket that sort of looks like a cape. Like,
yeah,
she's messed up, but like, I sort of admire her in parts. And a lot of that's maybe from the performance, because she doesn't come across as someone who's like lonely because she's like meek or shy. She just like, she's just totally, she seems like in control of, like her wants. And when she does find something she wants, which is this money, she's just like, okay, I don't care about my job. I'm going to just throw everything down and just leave and go for it. So I don't know. It's weird to say that I'm like saying this, deranged character is like cool, but that was sort of,
she's your manic pixie dream girl.
Well, it's very chaotic. It's like, she's, you know, she's in search of something that doesn't exist, but it's no one is going to stop her
because no one cares.
She keeps saying, I want to go to Fargo, and people keep saying, oh, you don't want to go there, it's too cold, I'm gonna, you know, we can go somewhere else, you can stay here, or like, is there somebody I can call? And she's just like, you know what, you're wasting my time, and she just like runs,
right?
And
like a crazy person.
But it is kind of like, I think it's, she does kind of that embody that spirit of just like, quit wasting my time. Like, I have something, I have a higher purpose. It's just
exactly what a crazy person would think.
Do you not have a higher purpose, Brian?
I mean, I had a girlfriend who was bipolar.
Yes.
Who every once in a while would go on a jag of, I'm like God's chosen one. I have to do something important and this life is holding me back. Do I believe that she should have gone to a foreign country searching for a treasure? No. I believe that it was periods like that where she needed to stop, think about what she was saying, and get a handle on what was going on. I mean, to me, this movie is almost like taking the kind of story you would expect from this and giving you what it actually is, which is horrifying. She's not a quirky, happy-go-lucky, manic pixie dream girl. She's a insanely delusional, really messed up, really lonely person who no one seems to care about.
But I don't think she's lonely. Well, maybe she is, because she does kiss that cop, now that I think about it.
Yeah.
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 She's also lonely,
you know,
just
what?
In that,
yeah,
no one cares about her. Like, maybe she doesn't feel loneliness, but she is utterly alone.
But I think it's like, there are scenes where, so she is in this very constrictive, like restrictive culture. It's like, you only have two paths that you can take. On the other hand, it's like, she calls, and like, as, I don't know, I hate to be like, I had to go like the whole mother thing, but it's like, I know through my own mother how that relationship goes. Just that whole thing where it's like, well, if you're not married and if you're not pregnant, then so what? And it is very dismissive, and it is very frustrating when it's like, you want something else and you're trying to communicate that to someone and they're just like, no, that's,
but when you,
I don't care.
When you're talking about, let's say you're on the phone with your mom, Amanda.
Okay.
And your mom says,
wow, we are going to some deep, dark places right now.
She says, are you married? How are things going at your job? Do you say, Mom, I have a destiny. I'm doing something so much more important than that.
Every day. Every day I tell her that.
Do you calmly explain that those aren't important to you? Basically, do you make it sound like you're about to save the planet, or do you set realistic goals?
No, and it,
I mean, her interactions with... I understand what you're saying, but her interactions with people are crazy. I mean, I hate using the term crazy that much, but she's unhooked. She's unhinged. It's like...
Well, she is. No, I agree she is, but there's something... But it is kind of like that thing where... Oh, man. It is just like a frustrating movie because, yeah, she's not a manic pixie dream girl. She's not quirky. She's not a... I don't think she's an... But at the same time, I don't think she's a totally unsympathetic character.
I'm not... No, she's apparently sympathetic because she's...
Well, yeah, but I mean... I mean,
there's no one there for her.
I mean, in terms of, like, pity. Like, you're not just, like... I didn't really necessarily pity her. I was just like,
I didn't pity her.
No one's gonna stop her. I mean, there's nothing you can
do. That's the thing. This is like if you were watching a movie, like a heist movie, and all you could think is, "Oh God, someone please stop them."
Hmm. Wait, when do you think that during heist movies?
I don't. Imagine a heist movie where you see like three knuckleheads try to knock over a bank. And the entire time, you know that the plan sucks, you know that they're actually trying to knock over a JCPenney, and you know the cops are onto them.
Yeah.
Like, would you say, go for the dream, you crazy diamonds? No. You would say, please stop, please go get help. And then, at the end of the movie, let's say they storm the bank, the JCPenney, and are shot immediately. Like, that's not a happy movie. That's not a comedy. That's the story of delusional people being put in a terrifying situation from which no one will try to save them.
Oh, Brian, man.
I've
had a reaction to this movie.
Yeah, I had a huge reaction to this movie.
Brian, do you want to talk about it?
I'm trying to.
Dude.
Brian, I know people you can talk to.
Well, look, I think we could. I think spoilers could help with this. So, do we want to want to jump into spoilers, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but yeah. So, do we think people should watch this movie?
Yeah, I do.
What do we think they should watch it as?
Well, that's not fair, Brian. You can't tell people.
Please, anyone who's seen this movie and is listening to this, even if you don't usually write in or talk to us on Twitter, please tell us if you thought this was a comedy. Or if you thought it was a heartrending story of mental illness gone unchecked in an uncaring world.
Oh, God.
What genre is that?
I think it falls under fantasy. So let's talk spoilers for Kimiko the Treasure Hunter. Spoiler alert, she dies at the end.
She dies, but they make it seem triumphant. And that's
Which
what's kind
is
of...
super fucking dark.
Yeah, because she... So it's like she's wandering through the wilderness and it starts snowing and then it opens on this like serene scene where you see this mound of snow and the camera slowly zooms in on it and then she pops up out of this mound of snow and she is radiant and has on lipstick.
Yeah.
And she looks beautiful. I mean, cause like she looks pretty ashy.
Never been redder.
Yeah, well, she looks, like, ashen and just, like, miserable throughout the entire movie. And then now she's just like, oh, she looks beautiful. And then she does actually find the treasure. She finds, because there's that red, ice scraper. Yeah, it's a red ice scraper. She finds it, and she finds the money. And then she looks over, and she's like, all right, Bunzo, and there's her rabbit. And then they walk off into the horizon.
Yeah.
And it's so, I think that's why I sat through the credits, because I thought it was going to be like the end of The Shining, where you see like Jack Nicholson's frozen corpse.
Holy shit.
I thought that's what was going to happen.
That would have been really dark.
Oh, that's what I was just like, I'm just going to see what happens.
Right.
but yeah.
Nope. She just wanders away with the bunny. And the money. The bunny money.
Aww. But, like, I don't feel... And this is something that... I don't think she really cared that much about the money.
I don't think she did either. That doesn't make it better.
No. Brian. Brian, take a breath.
Okay. Brian, I'm okay.
Take a deep breath.
I think I'm going to be all right. She fucking dies.
You're like those little kids in that viral video who saw the life of Timothy Green. Who just like, ah.
And he had to die. But the difference between this movie and Timothy Green is Timothy Green had to die.
Because he was awful.
Kumiko did not have to die. There were numerous people who should have been responsible for her.
Brian, there was nobody stopping her.
Yeah, again, you say that, like, it's her power that's making that happen. What it really is that people just don't care.
I don't agree with that.
Gives her a company credit card to get something. It was, like, her boss's anniversary. He's like, take this company credit card and do this thing. P.S. You've been replaced because you're a nightmare.
Yeah, that doesn't make any... I thought that was a very strange scene where he introduces that, like, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed girl and then sends her away to buy a... anniversary gift? I thought that was really strange.
But so she uses that card to buy a plane ticket, go overseas, go to America, and just start traipsing around trying to find the Fargo treasure. The company has the credit card canceled, so they obviously know that it's been purloined and used.
Mm-hmm.
They could have 100% used that information.
Yeah, but it's like...
To find her. She talks to her mom. Her mom is aware of the situation. Mom is just an asshole. You're not pregnant. You're not married. What are we even talking about? Oh, P.S. I hear that you absconded with company funds and maybe in a foreign country. She calls her mom from a payphone and a hotel phone, and the mom's like, what happened to your cell phone? Not, why am I getting a call from an American area code? Why is the national, like... region number a plus one instead of a whatever it is for Japan. Doesn't care. Doesn't give a shit. Cop, the girl runs away after she's just been crying at the table. Does he put an APB out on the cab? Does he hop into his own car? The cab isn't running away too fast. No, he just kind of like shrugs and he's like, well, I did my job.
But it's like...
Does the cab driver say, hey... A woman.
Well, the cab driver's deaf.
Just rang up. Well, I'm sorry. That deaf people can't call the police when someone made them drive into the middle of nowhere on a $116 fare and then jumped into the forest.
Wow. Like, you are irate with this movie, Brian.
I'm irate with the people in it. The movie. Poor character. If the movie was trying to be the movie that I'm seeing it as, bravo. If it wasn't, what the fuck?
Hey, Brian, remember that conversation in the movie? Remember that part in the movie where where he's saying about how movies aren't real?
Yes.
Remember that part?
Yes.
This movie's not real, Brian. No, I get what you're saying, though. I mean, I don't know. I think it was just I didn't have... I think you just there just comes a point where... You just have no control over a person's actions. You have no they had no control over her actions. There's nothing you can do, and you just have to be like, well, she's gonna do what she wants to do. I mean, there's no stopping her. So, I don't know. I think it's just that's kind of how I approached it.
Okay. Is that triumphant for you, or like, what are you getting out of that?
I didn't think it was necessarily. triumphant, because like I said before, I found it odd that the whole idea behind like death equals freedom was a little extreme, but
right, you haven't seen The Voices yet, have you?
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah, I was gonna ask Brian if you which one you like more, which one
between this and The Voices.
Yeah.
Probably The Voices, because that one was, but they both again, I don't know the intent behind this film as well as I believe I know the intent behind The Voices.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really difficult, but they're very similar for me in terms of what I'm watching.
Mm. Well, because Ryan Reynolds is clearly disturbed.
Right. So is Kaneko.
Yeah, yeah, she is. But like, we know, Brian. We know she's disturbed.
But you said Ryan Reynolds is clearly disturbed, as though it's still ambiguous with Kaneko.
No, well, I'm just saying, because he's in that movie, like, I think in the beginning of, well, I haven't seen The Voices yet, but just from the trailers, it's like, oh, he's disturbed. Like, yes, you just know immediately. But, like, I think in this movie, like, in the beginning, you just think, like, oh, she's bored with her life and wants to do, like, she just wants something exciting to happen. Right. And then as it goes along and you see, like, her actions are becoming more and more extreme, you realize, like, oh, okay, like, there's something else going on. Like, this isn't just, like, I know that we kept saying, like, she's a lonely person. It's like, this is more than loneliness. This isn't just, this is something else. Like, she's,
right, no, it begins one way and very slowly, yeah, morphs into another sometime around the point where she is sitting alone with a kid and then runs away.
Oh yeah, which I would also do. That's pretty much my reaction to being left with a child.
Good lord. But I mean, both the movies end in a way that makes it very difficult to understand how I'm supposed to view, through the movie's eyes, what came before. I will abstain from giving spoilers to The Voices for any people at home, and for you, Amanda, it just came out on Blu-ray. Check it out.
I want to. I will.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what I'm supposed to do right now.
You don't know what to do with your hands?
No, I have two coffee cups and just hold them. Like, it's a very strange situation to be in, because, again, I don't know what the movie wants from me.
Well, if the one scene where she arrives at the airport and meets those two guys is any indication, I want you to find God, Brian.
Obviously.
Oh, that was funny. Dude, you didn't laugh at that scene?
Danny's like, oh, yeah!
Wait, dude. Amanda, you laughed at that scene, right? That guy was hilarious.
I think that is the other Zellner. That's Nathan Zellner.
Okay.
Who's the missionary? I'm going to say that that's what they were.
Yeah, there was, yeah, something.
Wasn't that funny?
Yeah.
Mormon.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Know. Yeah. Come on, Brian.
That was fine, I guess. Of all of the things that I saw, that, I guess, would come the closest to being funny.
Okay.
So, Danny, I know that you said this is... So, did you think this was a dark comedy completely, or did you think it was more...
I mean, it's just strange because I view the movie on sort of, like, being on a different plane...
Mm.
Then, so it's like, it's weird to, like I said, it's like she's disturbed, but I don't necessarily think that the movie's view of that is like, that's the point. Like, we're just following this disturbed woman. And I think the logic errors are sort of like trivial, because I think the movie is, it just seems fantastical, like a legend or something. And she seems kind of, like, mythic.
I like the point you made about the cape.
Yeah, like, I agree that equating death with freedom is the problematic idea. Because that doesn't... If you're watching this movie on terms of mental illness, that doesn't... that doesn't exactly, like...
Right.
Seem like a mythic legend. But...
keep on trucking, crazy people. One day you'll find that treasure.
So that's
in your
bad
dreams. Of
that's
death.
Bad. Yeah, and I mean, the point you made about the company not going after, I mean, I think there's like Amanda said, there's sort of a deliberate criticism of that culture, and there's something good about her getting out of it.
Well, it's also like, if you worked for a company and somebody, like you said, Brian, absconded with company funds, would you be like, oh man, we have to find them. I bet they're crazy. I bet they need help.
They have a history with this woman.
Mm.
Not only that, but yeah, you'd send the cops after them, probably.
The Japanese cops?
No, you'd call up America and be like, hey, this is what's happening. You wouldn't just be like, nope, cancel the credit card, I guess we're done here. And if that's the case, then holy shit, I know what my plans for next weekend are. I just...
They're just like, they'll just cut you off, and then you're free to go.
Yeah, just, I go wherever I'm gonna go, I rock it for a little while. I'll tell you what, though, I'm making a giant cash withdrawal on that credit card. Not gonna be like her and expect that it's gonna keep being used. She calls up her mom and asks for her to wire her money. She obviously believes that it's just gonna work out. And this is after her mom has already had, like, 4 very unpleasant phone calls with her. And again, her mom is just like, it's almost impossible to believe that someone could be that obtuse.
Well, and I wonder, too, with... So, the very beginning of the film, when she's introduced searching for the tape, and she finds it in, like, a cave.
Right.
Like a... And she's using that same sort of embroidered map that she makes. So, did she watch another movie?
And
that movie led her to the Fargo tape?
Honestly, I thought... I was trying to come up with a reason for that all movie, and at first I thought it was like a Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close scenario, where like maybe her father used to play this game with her, and he died, and now she's gone nuts. Or maybe that's just like the thing that she imagined to herself.
That was the other thing that I wondered, yeah.
Or maybe she put it there herself, waited 6 months, forgot about it, and then went and got it.
I suppose it's not even worth, like, rationalizing it.
It's maybe, I feel like the part of it is, like, that's kind of a key to the movie. Because if it was just something that she happened upon in her mind and found, then there's some sort of strange supernatural element that we're not exploring enough.
Mm.
Otherwise, it's just, I don't know.
Maybe
she was dead at the start of the movie. I don't know.
Part of it kind of reminds me of Dancer in the Dark, in terms of how she envisions how everything is going to work out and how her life is sort of this adventure and how there's this adventure that she just knows that she has to embark on. And because even when she, like, at the very end, like, beyond having makeup on and just looking great, her blanket has been sewn into a sort of coat. Like, it's now, I don't know, like, it's not just hanging there.
Yeah,
it's almost like
draped on her in a much more flattering-ish way.
But it's just, yeah, it's like, obviously, this is, yeah, I mean, it is.
Yeah, that's an interesting comparison.
Yeah.
No musical numbers, though.
No musical numbers, surprisingly. Even though Bunzo was crying out for a musical number.
Bunzo. That rabbit was cute, you guys.
Adorable rabbit.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is... Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But you guys enjoyed this movie, right?
Yeah.
You just did what I did for It Follows, Brian.
I don't know what to tell you guys.
Brian is just so stunned.
So wait, Brian, were you expecting this to be something different?
Yeah.
Were you expecting it to be a dark comedy?
I was expecting it to be either a dark comedy or just a straight up farce comedy.
A farce?
A farce.
Wow.
Like, oh, here's a culture clash movie about a woman who doesn't get that this tape isn't real.
Oh.
I didn't see anything for I saw the whatchamacallit, the poster. I didn't watch a trailer.
Mm.
I knew what it was about. I was like, oh, I guess this is going to be a comedy. Nope. Not a single fucking laugh, Danny.
I saw it with a crowd and I laughed.
Did everyone else laugh?
Now that I think about it.
Did your relatives laugh?
Yeah, they were laughing.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. So the King family has the same sense.
I think our family was like the only ones who laughed.
Okay, well, now we have a whole new mystery to unravel.
I kind of want to hang out with your family, Dan.
Yeah, it sounds like a killer time. So any final thoughts on this? I mean, we all liked it.
Yeah, I did like it.
I didn't like it a lot, but I would definitely tell people to check it out. But, I mean, like, I wouldn't say go see this movie, it's funny. I would say this is a really bracing depiction of a woman succumbing to her mental illness. I don't know. Again, so listeners, please, for the love of God, write in and tell us what you thought of Kimiko the Treasure Hunter. Any final thoughts before we do Blu-rays and then get out of here?
No.
Okay. Danny, final? Any other laugh lines you want to throw our way before we...
Any what lines?
Laugh lines.
Oh, God.
What was your favorite punchline in this movie?
Maybe the one at the airport. Wait, so what was his... Isn't there a funny line where he was like... references his backstory, like he was...
Oh, he's a depraved individual?
Oh, yeah.
I laughed at that.
I was trying to find my way, too.
Oh,
the guy... All right, the old man who called the Hare Krishna the Hare Kirshners was funny.
Hare Kirshners. And also, I love how they're sitting there, and the way they attract people is the one guy's holding a sign, and the other guy is playing the piano horribly.
Yes. How many converts do you think they get a year?
Well, they obviously target foreigners. Yeah. So.
Oh, God. Yeah. All right. Well, that's it. Kimiko the Treasure Hunter is out in limited release now. Check it out. Let us know if it's a comedy or a horrifying existential tragedy. coming out to Blu-ray this week, we have The Babadook, which we talked about on this show. I am about a month or so away from getting my own personal copy of the Babadook book. Yeah, I'm excited.
Didn't they have a deal for a while where you could get the book and the DVD or the Blu-ray together?
I don't know. It's a good question.
I thought they did.
I just got the book. I'm cool with just the book. We also have Big Eyes. That was Tim Burton's new film.
Did you guys see that?
Nope.
Nah.
The only review I got of it, positive review, was that Tim Burton hired an actress who actually looked like Joan Crawford to be in the film because the painters actually did a portrait for her.
Okay.
That's the only thing I know about the movie, and it was for my friend who was just like... And that
that's a compliment. I was thinking about so many other things.
Oh, God. All right. Also coming out, Map to the Stars, which we talked about previously. That's it for new things. Oh, wait. The Woman in Black 2.
Did that just come straight to VOD?
No, that was released in the theaters.
Oh.
way to keep an eye out. We also have a couple of criterions. We have Sullivan's Travels and Odd Man Out. And Zardoz is also coming to Blu-ray.
Oh, I want to see that.
Yeah, the cult classic insane thing, Zardoz.
You guys should listen to the How Did This Get Made?
Oh, I already did.
Ah, so good.
Yes, the How Did This Get Made on Zardoz was incredible. Anyone who's not listening to How Did This Get Made, the podcast on Earwolf, check it out.
Mm-hmm.
It is fantastic. So yeah, any of these, I don't know. Oh, Goodbye to Language 3D is apparently also coming to Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah. Well, is that streaming right now?
I have no idea, actually.
I think it is coming to Netflix soon.
Oh, okay.
So
That was a good film.
Indeed. all right. So that's it. Let's say goodbye to the fine folks at home. Danny King, where can we find you online?
Twitter.com/TheKingBulletin.
Like you said, .com at the end.
TheFilmStage.com.
What is even happening right now?
Oh, jeez. Danny and I just thought about something depressing, and now we're giggling.
What about you, Amanda? Where can we find you?
So I am at MediaWaltz on Twitter.com. You can also read my blog on Pittsburgh film culture at Still Cinema at WordPress. And I'm actually going to be on a podcast called Werewolf Ambulance. It's a podcast that my friends have, and we're doing the 1981 cult horror movie The Pit. So that might be out tomorrow. So
keep an ear out for that. You can find me on thefilmstage.com, twitter.com/BrianJRowan, my personal site, dearfilm.net. And of course, the podcast that I do with my friends Dan and Ben, that is Movie Dare, movie-dare.com. You can also find me dead on the side of the road in Fargo. My frozen corpse will be marked with a red ice scraper. So, and it will be a triumph, goddammit. What the hell kind of laugh was that?
Oh, God, a guilty one.
Okay. Anyway,
Brian is in such a disturbed state.
I know.
Brian, if you need to call me.
Are you not just going to shout at me about the fact that I'm not married or pregnant yet?
If you just want to talk, you know. Happen?
Amanda, I need help. Are you married? Are you pregnant? What the fuck is wrong with you? Get off the phone.
Come back and live with me, you loser.
Oh, God. All right. I don't remember what we're watching next week, but we're going to watch something, I'm sure. So, ladies and gentlemen, join us next week when we talk about whatever that happens to.